tonight we hope to explore the relationship between the Christian faith and vocation. I've asked Phil Nordquist to start us off by giving a brief response to that question. The question posted is, are some vocations more Christian than others? After he makes his response to that, I'll make a brief response to what he has to say, and I'll try to do my job and somehow disagree with him. Phil.
I asked to go first because I was afraid the schizoid philosopher to my left would come up with a number of responses and I would lose track of the argument before I even began. So I thought I would say something first, and then we'll see what happens. When I was a little boy, I was very shy and very earnest, and all the people in my church used to tell me that I should be a preacher when I grew up, because I stood around looking serious and earnest all the time, and was very nice. They weren't persuaded that either of my brothers should be a preacher because one was too sharp-tongued and the other was handsome and ran around with girls. But I seemed safe, and so one of my earliest memories is this almost unbearable pressure of having been chosen by especially the nice ladies in my congregation that I should be a pastor. There was a feeling then, and I suppose there is a feeling in many churches now, that to be a pastor is somehow the pinnacle of a Christian life. Once a month we had Missionary Sunday in my Sunday school, and then I think it was understood that the adventurous activities of Swedish Lutheran missionaries in Tanzania was perhaps even a higher calling, but that was vouchsafed only to a few. As I grew older, I knew I didn't want to be a pastor, but I struggled with that question of vocation and tried to decide what it was that one could do and live a successful life and still take Christianity seriously. It was as a great relief that I read Martin Luther somewhere along the line and discovered what Luther said about vocation. In the Middle Ages, you remember, they functioned quite a bit like the nice old ladies in my church. It was understood there was a kind of Christian imperialism in the Middle Ages, and everything was in some fashion or another Christianized, so that politics and political authority was somehow explained from a Christian point of view, and economics was controlled from a Christian point of view, and the highest callings in life were Christian. That is, at the very pinnacle of life, there were the monks, and then there were the clergymen, and then below that, the nobles, and below that, the other sorts of professions that one pursued. At the very bottom of the scale, interestingly enough, were musicians, which I find interesting and sometimes amusing. And I tell my colleagues on the music faculty that, and they don't find it amusing at all. There's a sermon by a 13th century monk, Berthold of Regensburg, the greatest Dominican preacher of the 13th century, in which he describes the choirs of angels that exist in life. And the 10th choir of angels, there are 10 choirs in heaven and 10 choirs on earth, the 10th choir of angels were musicians and jugglers and dancers, and they were thrown out of heaven and descended to the nether regions. Well, I discovered that in Luther that there was not There were not 10 choirs of angels, nor were there 10 choirs of people on earth in some sort of descending rank of importance. Those who were major leaguers, and those who were minor leaguers, and those who played only some sort of amateur religion. And that it wasn't easier for some to achieve salvation rather than others. Luther argued in the most radical kind of way, I suppose, for his day, that every area of life was equally important in the eyes of God, that there were no treasured professions, that one was not closer to God in one area rather than another, and so that one could live a successful life and glorify God just as effectively by tilling the soil as by being religious in some professional sense. So that religion was not a professional matter at all. It was something that all should take seriously, and every area of life was equally important and could be equally successful as an expression of one's religious being or one's religious character. I find that very not gratifying, very freeing, and I thought it was a marvelous sort of discovery. So there is not a sort of clerical monopoly over life, but rather there is no difference in the various vocations or professions that one pursues. What one has to do is to do well, to do as well as one can the things that one is supposed to do, and that glorifies God. It is a kind of liturgy when one teaches well or plows well or heals well. It's as important as saying the liturgies professionally well, or preaching, or whatever. Well, that was kind of long and rambling, philosopher, and I apologize for that. But some professions aren't better than others, and it's not better to be religious in one area of life. The most important thing to do is to be the best historian you can be.
A salutary reminder, I think, that the village philosopher here isn't really a philosopher, but is himself a historian. I'll try to do a good job being philosopher, though, for the moment, and respond to some of the things that Phil has said, and I think take issue with a few of the things he suggested. Just to show that we don't have totally different backgrounds, it was long expected in my family that I would be a minister. The reasons were a little different, probably because no one thought of me as being particularly nice, but it was true that my father was the first son in his family, and he was a clergyman, and his father, who was the first son in his family, was a Lutheran clergyman, and his father, who'd come over from Germany, and who was also a first son, was a Lutheran clergyman, and so it was thought to be predestined that I would follow into this same path. Indeed, my 88-year-old grandmother, whom I still see from time to time, still firmly believes that I've taken a somewhat eccentric route toward the ministry, and it's taken me a long time to get there, but any day now the announcement will come in that I've changed vocations. So that brings us back to vocation. I guess I'm troubled with the notion that all secular vocations are equally unproblematic when it comes to their relationship to the Christian faith. I guess I agree with Phil, and I'm grateful for Luther for breaking down the kind of distinction between clerical and lay vocations, suggesting that somehow the one is closer to God and more exalted than the other. I think I agree with that. But one night in a bar in West Chicago, I met a young man and grew to know him and found it peculiar that when I asked him what he did, he didn't say much about it. And only after, he had some confidence in me, he shared with me the fact that his father, who had died a natural death, was nonetheless a hitman, professional hitman, for the mafia. His father was very good at what he did it well, apparently scored a number of hits, and died a natural death. Now, there's something, I think, about all of our moral intuitions and Christian background that suggests that had this man at some time or another chosen discipleship, that would have involved giving up that particular profession. That there's something about that, regardless of maybe even who he was working for, that would, regardless of how well he did it, made it troublesome. I don't think it would have really much mattered, though maybe it would have, whether he was working for the mafia or the CIA or some other civic group in Chicago. So that it seems to me that it's really troublesome rather than easy to wonder about whether it is that some of the things that we do for a living aren't somehow radically problematic when it comes to our abilities to be faithful while we're doing them. To bring this closer to home, lest we think that the only problems arise in the case of hitmen, I think if you feel that it arises there, you have to begin to wonder whether it might arise elsewhere, and that opens up the question. I shared with John Schramm one afternoon the fact that in my own work I sometimes have doubts. And I'm a teacher, but what I do is to be as rigorous and methodical as I can in training minds to think critically, which I think is fine, but to think critically often about what's practical, what's effective, what's pragmatic, what's sensible, what's reasonable, what will work. And I finish there. That is, I don't go beyond that. Never have. And I feel uncomfortable about it because my own view is that being a disciple doesn't mean just being effective. There has to be more words said. And it worries me. I feel some tension there, some strain. I worry about professions of all sorts in which people serve the rich exclusively. Not just that a lot of their clients or patients are rich persons, but that their basic calling is one that serves not just the rich as a group, but their interests, the rich and the powerful, instructing the powerful how to gain more power and the rich to gain more wealth, even if this means at the expense of other human beings. I have problems with that. So I guess I think that the secular vocations all ought to be scrutinized, whatever we're doing, under the notion of what it means to be a disciple. Let me read you in closing. I happen to teach a course on Bonhoeffer, not a course, an introduction to Letters and Papers from Prison, and brought along the cost of discipleship. Bonhoeffer, who is himself a student of Luther, and who expands sometimes Luther's understanding, I think, of the gospel, writes as follows, and I'll close with just reading this paragraph and then open the question up to the rest of us. He says, "It is a fatal misunderstanding of Luther's action to suppose that his rediscovery of the gospel of pure grace offered a general dispensation from obedience to the command of Jesus, or that it was the great discovery of the Reformation that God's forgiving grace automatically conferred upon the world both righteousness and holiness. On the contrary, for Luther, the Christian's worldly calling is sanctified only insofar as that calling registers the final radical protest against the world. Only insofar as the Christian's secular calling is exercised in the following of Jesus does it receive from the gospel new sanction and justification." Okay, let me read that once more. "Only insofar as the Christian's secular calling is exercised in the following of Jesus does it receive from the gospel new sanction and justification." Okay, let's start off. Brad.
I just wonder, for me to participate in this, I need some clarification between what you might mean as a difference between vocation and occupation. Are you making any distinctions there? Or, you know, what's the difference?
Your vocation is what I suppose you have been called to do. This notion of the calling is a peculiar one, and often hard to pin down. I guess I would understand occupation as a somewhat less pretentious or less formidable word. I am prepared to accept them as the same thing. Maybe there are problems there I don't see. So it's what you do in life.
Do you have some thoughts, Brad, yourself on that?
Well, it seems to me that your occupation is what you do to earn your daily bread and butter, but your vocation might be something, might be very closely related to that, but then again, might not be very closely related to that at all. I somehow have difficulty imagining thousands of people who work on assembly lines in Detroit as what I see as occupations, pursuing that in a vocational sense. Although it might somehow be part of it be the same thing, but I think in a society that's oriented around the kind of labor that many people in our industrial professions do, to me that strikes me more as an occupation rather than a vocation.
There's a hand up. John, did you have your hand up as well?
I thought that the distinction might be helpful in that most of what Phil said, it seemed to me, got at the vocational question that Luther did speak to, and that makes the scrub woman on the knees working as much to the glory of God as the priest on his knees at the sacrament or something. In other words, the assumption that it was a calling within Christian calling, within the calling of the Spirit or something. The occupational question, are there some ways to earn your income that are more Christian than others, I think would be a better discussion. Mm-hmm. Would be more controversial, would be more debatable. I don't know if that's what, I didn't know if that's where Brad was heading or not.
No, I quite agree with you.
Yeah, okay.
Mark, could you tell me the question for tonight's discussion? I haven't read it.
Oh, the question was, which was really a way of getting people to begin to think about the broad issue of this relationship between vocation and occupation and the Christian faith, was, are some vocations more Christian than others? Anybody else before calling on Brad again? Yeah, Brad.
Well, I guess I'd agree with what John said, because in that sense I see vocation, that calling, as what comes to us from God. And in that sense I don't understand how you can talk about some callings from God being more Christian than other callings from God. It may be that that's not a good way to understand what vocation means, but I would prefer, like John, I guess, to think
okay.
In terms of the occupational choice that I make as to how I'm going to earn the wherewithal to keep on living, that makes it my choice. And,
okay.
And I also recognize God gives me a calling to work within that choice to do certain Christian things.
Okay, I think let's all agree we're talking about occupations here. All right? So the question then, are some occupations, are some ways we earn our daily bread? And things that we have chosen to do.
Are some more Christian than others? Yes.
And how does one go about making that determination? What would be some examples? Anybody? Yes, you have some.
Well, Mark, I wanted to check and see if there isn't a problem with history, too, because it seems to me that when you first responded to Phil, you immediately pulled something out of the 20th century, the time and place in which we live, and yet you mentioned almost simultaneously with that Martin Luther and Dietrich Bonhoeffer. I believe that when Martin Luther was writing, there weren't any mafia hitmen, much less numerous occupations.
Oh, yes, there were.
Yes.
They had Machiavelli as their manual, and there's a whole lot of stuff going on.
It could be that the people that Martin Luther was addressing, that the peasants were actually kind of a captive audience. They were, in fact, in the church. They were, in fact, indoctrinated in a certain way. And I think that at the time of Bonhoeffer, it was quite different from that, because wasn't he, in fact, in prison under the threat of death almost constantly?
He was for the last 2 years of his life.
Yeah, well,
in prison.
In prison.
The passage I read was from Cost of Discipleship, which he wrote before that.
So I guess the question I'm getting at is that whether maybe you didn't change the basis of things in your answer back to him and talking about. In other words, maybe we could make a definition. There are certain occupations, and I would take this word now that was suggested, occupation. that are just flat of this world, and we're not really talking about those. That are just plain out and out evil, and like you said, our moral sense will tell us that they're the person in that occupation simply has to give it up, and that we're not really talking about those when we say, are there any occupations? And then, you know, we sneak in this little thing for Christians that are more Christian than others.
Start your list and see how far you get
with
any group. What are life if then? Can you add any?
I heard of a stripper for God. I had a little trouble with that.
Depends on what she had tattooed on.
That's not that easy. We tend to respond almost at once that there's something amiss there. Dostoevsky, in his best novel, I think, has a character, Sonia, who is what the narrator calls a whore for Christ. She is a prostitute. She lives next to the leading and most evil character in the novel, Smidrigailov. Her name is Sonia. And she quite literally is doing that to feed her family because it's the only thing that she can do, and literally is starving to death. And in other words, it's not as though some people haven't thought that that kind of activity could be done in such a way or under such straits or in such circumstances or by such persons that it wouldn't be. I cut somebody off when I gave that example. Well, let's start on the, yeah. Well, Brad, go ahead once more. Yes.
I worked for Boeing, and up until a few years ago, I worked in a part of the company that was dedicated to building big missiles to carry bombs to the other side of the world. I suppose if I viewed that as my work, that I could have viewed it as going all against being a disciple. I certainly didn't believe in war. It was my way of earning a living. I like to think that I'm a worker in war. I like to think, though, that my calling to be a disciple is in relationship with those people I work with, not with my product or what I'm doing. And if I'm following the instruction to love my neighbor, and being a witness, and I'm doing that with those people, it makes no difference what I'm doing, as long as I view that as what I'm supposed to be doing. On the other hand, I think someone could involve themselves in, quote, a more Christian environment, and if he or she didn't relate to those around him as a witness or in loving the neighbor, that in spite of the environment he's put in, he is not living out a Christian. So I would even contrast the occupation with what you're really doing there. And my brand of thinking happens to be in relationships. And I think that's the measure of where you might be on some kind of scale if you wanted to make a list.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, who is the disciple?
Whether your vocation is a Christian vocation or not, is it society or is it you within yourself? She asked, her question was, in case some of you didn't hear back up there, who is to decide whether your occupation is Christian or not? Is it society or is it you within yourself? Did I get an answer?
Yeah.
Yes.
Why isn't it the gospel? I keep thinking when you're talking, your love is extending to those people. I mean, that you're working, you know, for the people that you're working with for the next desk. But it bothers me that your love doesn't extend to the people. I mean, I'm not condemning you. I don't want to come on, you know, mean. But it bothers me that that love won't extend across the world because things are connected. I mean, that we're wiping out people. Maybe that isn't a Christian occupation.
You're talking to me?
Yeah.
He answered your question, I think, by saying, if I understood you correctly, that in response to who decides, is it you or is it society, that it's neither, it's the gospel. That was the first part, is that right? Yes.
Well, I don't know your name, but that's the thing I had hoped to clarify by the vocation and the occupation. I sense that in your situation, your vocational calling is to those people and the atmosphere you create in your job and so forth. However, the occupational thing that you and many others are involved in is, you know, building certain hardware to do certain things. And that's where it's helpful for me to try to distinguish between vocation and occupation. I just would want to add that in the past year, as I lived in near the D.C. area with a lot of military people, I had to think a lot every time I rode the subway out of the Pentagon about what some of the people were employed to do who worked there, knowing that Luther had said, you know, soldiering can be a noble profession and can in itself be a Christian vocation, a calling. I never really came to a good, clear feeling on that, though, knowing that probably part of what those people were doing in the Pentagon was just planning destruction. I mean, that was a part of their occupation, their daily work was to plan for that. That the question of the military today in our country is one for me that's unresolved.
Okay, that might give us a kind of focus to explore out from, a kind of concrete question to test this. Yes.
Well, it seems we have a dichotomy here because we've heard about hitmen and we've heard about soldiers, and when does one become the other? Mm-hmm. And that is the real question of when does your occupation become sinful? And in fact, I think we all face that. In whatever occupation we have, your occupation can become sinful, be it a historian or businessman or whatever. And so we're all faced with this dichotomy in our occupations. And it's not the particular occupation or if you choose vocation. It's the question of whether sin is there or not there. It seems to me that is the crux of the issue.
Yes, ma'am.
I think maybe it does depend on the vocation and the occupation, on the specifics of what it is. The point that you brought up about that a person is both in relationships and doing some kind of work or producing a product, I think it's too easy to say one, to say we have to choose between one or the other, instead of saying it's both, and we can't deny the connections between that we are both relating to other human beings we're working with, and that the product or whatever we're doing, farming, is also relates to the people who use it or that we use it on. And I think of a Bible study that Dan did this last winter around Easter time on baptism in the early church. And for baptismal candidates in the 3rd century, and Dan can correct all that I say that's wrong, that there were certain occupations that baptismal candidates, if those were their occupations, they had to give them up in order to begin the 3-year, 2-year, whatever, mm-hmm. preparation for baptism. And there was a list. There were concrete things you didn't do as a Christian. It was just no way. And 4 years ago, I almost joined ROTC. Today, that would be the last thing on God's earth that I would do, literally. And for me, there's a growing list of things that I just see as antithetical to the gospel. And things related to the military and destruction of other human beings are jumping onto that list day by day.
Well, I like the fact that something has come up in the discussion that is very close to me personally, and that is this thing about the military, and particularly about making hardware, because a long time ago, it must have been about 17 years ago, I worked at Boeing. I worked there 7 years. You wouldn't believe I'm that old, but three through. I have teenage children. And when I worked there, during those 7 years, I was the part of the company that was immediately related to the customer. In other words, I was the part that sold the product to the customer. I had a lot to do, therefore I was very well aware that the customer was the Air Force. And the Air Force had a saying, which I think they may still have, in connection with the things that were for warfare. At that time it was the B-52 bombers, Strategic Air Command. And I think it's also STAC that has Minuteman missiles, which were the two big things that I had an awful lot to do with that are real warfare items. And their saying was that their business was peace. Philosophy was that that we lived under and worked under was that these terrible weapons are not to go out and kill a lot of other people with, but what they are there for is a threat against somebody who is threatening us, of course, namely Soviet Russia at that time. And I think to some extent even that was long enough ago that there was the thought was that Red China, Communist China, was that kind of a threat too, that we wanted to have this terrible powerful war machine ready and poised to set off as a counter threat, that is, as a terror device. And they even had this concept, which I think is still in vogue, called MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction, under which they wouldn't dare do anything, make a big military move against us and our allies, because we could assure them that we could mutually destroy each other and would in fact do that. And I believe to this day that these countries, these governments, operate under this principle. And I bought that at that time, like that gentleman over there. I felt, while I worked there, that I was every bit a Christian. And I was, boy, we were making these the best possible B-52s and the best possible Minuteman system because of that. And now I have a different point of view because I'm many years removed from it. It wouldn't have been easy for me to make that change very quickly. But over the years, I've come to a different feeling, and I still don't think I necessarily have the final answer. And that is, I feel very strongly that all of those weapons are useless and that the whole idea of MAD, for instance, is absolutely insane. Because I don't believe these things are that much in the hands of men. And if they're in the hands of men, I don't want to trust them because, you know, I don't want to trust men with that kind of faith. So I think maybe history really is more in the hands of God than it is of men. And maybe just the foolish little remnant of Christians that pray for peace are far more powerful than all the mad weapon systems there are. And so I feel a whole different thing about it. I couldn't go to work at Boeing now on those systems and feel that I was the same. I'm at a different place in my life now.
Yes, John.
I'm just kind of curious as to people's reaction to whether or not it's our understanding of the Christian faith that there could be at any age such a list. In other words, if it is the gospel, not an individual or society, how would that be implemented? How does the list come? Would you expect the church to have consensus about certain occupations being more Christian than others? Or would you resent the church having a list? Most people have said, yes, some Christian occupations are... some occupations are more Christian than others. At least no one has said no yet. And I guess I'm just kind of curious as to whether or not there should be such a list in every age. Or that's one of the tasks. Do you expect it to come down from church headquarters? Or help from the local people with whom you celebrate the sacraments and the worship every week? Or
no tax collectors.
Pardon?
I said, no tax collectors.
Who? Yes.
As the society in India is, many of you know so much better than I, had five classes. At the lower class, the untouchables. They slaughtered the animals, they worked with leather shoes, and they carried away the excrement. In our own society, when I was a boy in rural Texas, the people that ran the slaughterhouse, even though we all ate meat, it was really a dreadful occupation because slaughterhouses were so ugly and unsanitary, and the guys that worked in them just covered with blood from head to foot and came home with the filthy, smelly clothes. My favorite poem, I think, is Spoon River Anthology, Edgar Lee Masters, where this person runs a slaughterhouse in Spoon River, and he is thought of by ordinary church members as too filthy to be in their church, and they can't understand how this woman lives with him. And finally, she dies, and he cuts cedar boughs and puts on the casket that he makes himself and buries her himself. And then, Master says, and then he tore down his slaughterhouse. It's a very mysterious, lovely thing about his love for her. An editor in Chicago that got that poem didn't understand it, so he buried his wife and then he tore on down to the slaughterhouse.
So we have some answers to John's question, which was, should there be in every age such a list, such as the one that Marilyn described in historical terms? If so, who should make it up? And if so, what, given that we're a group here to think through this, what occupations might be on it in our day and time? First of all,
Paul. It's not really trying to answer directly, but it's to compound the difficulty a bit more. It seems to me that the farther I get, the more I see a deep taint in much of what is happening in our society institutionally, and the interlocking of these institutions in profound kind of ways. And I think if I sense anything about the younger generation, at all, that a lot of them have grave difficulties almost across the board with most every institution, and that need to discover a way to affirm a calling that has integrity and authenticity is really back of this restlessness and complete unwillingness finally to put their roots down in any one place because of that uneasiness with the way society seems to be, so that you can move, when you start the list, beyond the war list. There's the chemical industries that have strewn all kinds of dumps all over the country, and one says, what about that? And you know, where you can make the list pretty big. And the question almost comes for me, not so much whether they aren't tainted, but is it best to go outside them and shoot in, to use a figure that I guess I'm sorry about, but let's put it that way. Or do you take a stance within them and try to do something to change the way they are? And neither seem to be very, very helpful alternatives. And those that go outside to form and forge their own societies, we've got a rather tragic record of a lot that have not worked very well in the way of forming something different and new. And I guess I just multiply the problem.
Martin?
I would say in answer to John's question that no, I don't think there should be such a list for two reasons. One is that it interferes with the freedom, I think, that we're given under the gospel to, by half-step and altering step, to find our way towards God, in the sense that we're allowed to make our own mistakes. There are certain vocational feelings we have, which I think come out of our sense of what our gift is from God. We pursue those things. And it would seem to me that that vocation or that occupation which is most Christian is the last one we're in, for the reason that Marilyn and Frank and this gentleman have described. To me, the three of them have collectively described a process of, in their faithful attempt to understand the meaning of the gospel in their life, their values have changed. And they are now pursuing courses which they would not have pursued before. Now, which is not to say that their course before was faulty, but that was an earlier time when their understanding of the scripture and the understanding of the gospel in their life was a little bit more limited. And so it doesn't seem to me to ride as much on what you're doing as it does on how open are you to the continuing process of understanding the gospel in your life. It seems to me if one is open to that and attempting to understand and respond in a responsible way, that there will be a natural process towards those things which one can live with. And at the end, or at any one point, you can say you are in Christian occupation, as long as you're faithful to that gospel as you understand it at that point. You're never better or worse. You're always just moving towards the gospel. Maybe that's what the church talks about when it talks about the process of sanctification, the process of becoming like a saint.
Okay, there's one no answer and an explanation for it. No, there shouldn't be such a list. Anybody think, yes, there should be?
Well, I certainly wouldn't go along with what he said. I really feel that we are kidding ourselves if we think that all the occupational opportunities that are set up for us are being set up by men or women with high calling, and that many of them have many other kinds of purposes than what I think could be called Christian, as I understand it, and that we therefore have to measure them rather carefully, and we need counsel because of the interlocking nature of so much of the implications of a lot of these occupational possibilities.
Okay, are there some other no's since we, or some, yes?
Well, as a person is in the process of moving towards the gospel, to flounder and do that by yourself happens. I mean, there's those parts of that you just kind of have to do. That's your decisions to make, and you come to forks in the road and you choose paths traveled and less traveled by. The thing of it is that there seems to be, in all of life, there are things that you don't try out to find that they're not good things to do. Like, just ridiculous things, like jumping off cliffs. And, I mean, there are all sorts of things that are poor for your mental, physical, and spiritual health to do. And families and communities always have things that you just discourage people that you're in relationship to from doing. And it seems to me that the church, at least in my experience, has been not helpful at all in showing me that there's anything that is a Christian that I can't do other than blatantly breaking commandments like thou shalt not kill and doing it for profit as a hitman. I mean, I don't know that any of us would. I suppose you could maybe, in a Joseph Fletcher manner, try and build a unique case in which that would be a moral, loving thing to do. But I am frustrated by the fact that the church, in my experience, has not seen itself as having a role as making decisions together or helping one another to struggle with those kinds of tough questions. The personalism that bothers me.
Yes, sir.
Well, I think it would be, I would have nothing against being presented with a list. I think it would be quite helpful for all those that have had to make this sort of decision. But I don't think I could trust any organization or any other, I don't know if I could trust any author but myself to make that list, because for the simple reason, we brought up the military, we brought up chemical corporations as possible names on that list of things. But if a church is to make up that sort of list, I think it would be hypocritical when, take for instance, the two leading candidates for the office of president. They've got by far the largest percentages of support. Both favor increased military. Now I find it hard for anybody to tell me that Christians are not supporting increased military. If the Christian community is supporting something that we're going to put on this list, that doesn't seem to outright and straightforward. Likewise, anytime you buy a plastic bottle, you're supporting this chemical industry, which you might put on this list and say is bad. Until you can come to a consensus and decide that, you know, as a Christian community, you're going to fight against this, who could make a list?
First of all, let me call on this gentleman and answer your question.
I come from a one industry town. This one industry in this town happens to be a naval shipyard. And I'm sure that if this list was drawn up, as I hear it being spoken out tonight, that you would lose probably 75 to 100 Christian churches. These churches are supported probably 75% by people working in the Naval Shipyard in Burlington, Washington, and the end gardens within a 20-mile radius of Burlington. I find it very difficult to say that these people that are attending these churches aren't really good Christians.
Okay, your question.
I would agree with Marty that this is the 150th year of our Lutheran Church and the 20th year of our American Lutheran Church, and we were given the freedom to be Christians, to use our freedom to choose our vocation. If we didn't use this freedom, we'd be going backwards.
Yes,
using the confessions. We are at once sinful and redeemed. And I think as you look at occupations, we have to take that doctrine seriously, because at once, even within the church, the demonic is at work as well as in the Lord. And I think as we look at things, I have a lot of trouble calling any occupation Christian, just taking that doctrine seriously. That may be a helpful way of going about seeing what is a more helpful type of a vocation to be in.
I'm very uncomfortable about the way this conversation seems to have dealt with the military. My family has been in the military for years, and the men in my family are loving people. They are not sitting around wondering when they can go out and kill somebody, but they are willing, if they have to defend the rest of us, and at great cost. It's serious to them that it may cost them their life, and they're not going out hoping they can kill somebody. They're thinking, if need be, they'll protect the rest of us. Let's give them a little credit and not just, you know, cut the whole thing off and say that's anti-Christian.